It's time for the End of Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
This is Damian Lemon, and this is In the Conversation, the podcast. Yes, yes. Back in this bitch, Muhammad is away, so it is just you and I again, one on one. Real quick though, quick update though, real talk. I spoke to Muhammad today and he said, "What up?" He shouted y'all out, so you know he'll be back to the mic soon. But you know, just keeping y'all tapped in as much as I can. But you know, yeah, so he said peace. So that's that. And this is, you know, it's us for right now. Anyway, how y'all feeling? Get out of here. Now, we done talked about that. That wasn't even supposed to happen, but I look. You gonna do what you gonna do, but it is what it is. It's what it is. Best of luck with all of that. Anyway, had to put my shades on. Oh, shit, man. So, yeah, I'm chilling. This week was a cool little week. I don't know how much I did. I was moving around. I was in the world. A few shows. Shows here in the city. Went out to Jersey, did a show. I'm trying to think what else. Where else was I at? Went and got out with the fam of Lamsky. Went and got some food and laughs. You know, we do that quite a bit now, you know, so we did that. Went to this little Louisiana spot, like Louisiana, I guess, bayou cuisine or whatever. You know, I had some jambalaya. Cajun jambalaya with shrimp and crawfish. You know, I'm allergic to shrimp historically, traditionally, for many, many years. Same thing with crab, but, you know, I came back with the crab years ago. I fought my way back. And I figured, you know what, maybe I'm not allergic to shellfish like I thought I was. You know, I remember when I first, not when I first, but I remember one time, a long time ago, it was All-Star Weekend. I forget where it was. It might have been in D.C. I'm not sure exactly where it was. Maybe, I don't know, Denver? All I know is I was at an event. I think it was a Jordan event. It was a nice event. It was some fly shit. And they had, you know, I had a little buffet. And at the buffet, they had, like, this little spaghetti dish, like a spaghetti and sauce dish. And the sauce, which I thought was like a meat sauce, you know what I mean? Chill. I'm trying to be more mature. Anyway, so I thought it was a, you know, it's like a ground beef, so you know, that type of thing. Anyway, so I'm eating this shit and I'm like, yo, this shit is good. Sauce is slamming. And then either I looked at the sauce or somebody said, you know that shrimp. I said, what? I panicked. Cause I'm in like a fly ass event. You know what I mean? I might have even been dressed. It might have been one of them events where you had to kind of throw some shit on, some, you know, almost formal type of thing. I'm like, oh, hell no. I'm just ready for my eyes to swell up, my throat to close, something crazy, some type of reaction. I'm shook. Turns out none happened. It was like somebody said, yo, they caught the cops is coming. You're like, oh shit, where do I go? Do I go out on the balcony? I ain't gonna spoil nothing, but do I go out, you know? Anyway, nothing happened. So I said, yo, wait a minute. I think I might not be allergic to shellfish anymore. And so the next day, I guess when I got back to the city, I went straight to Pathmark and ordered like a half a pound of shrimp. And I went in my kitchen and I tried to cook up a half a pound of shrimp. I don't know how I was doing it, boiling. I don't know exactly what I was doing. I think I called either my grandmother or my sister to get the little recipe. And they were like, you sure? And I was like, yeah, I think I might be good. They were like, all right. I don't even think my sister ever believed I was allergic. She was like, all right, go ahead. All I know is the smell of the shrimp cooking. I guess since I was allergic for so long, like it just it made me nauseous immediately. I didn't even eat the shrimp. The shit made me nauseous immediately. I don't know if I threw up, but it was one of those, you know, when you got the I'm about to throw up feel. Sometimes that's all it takes. You know, sometimes you just stand it over the toilet ready to throw up and it's covered up. You know what I mean? It's like, oh wow. Anyway, so damn, I was just like, ah, let me chill. So I didn't fuck with shrimp for a while. Crab, I've been on crab, you know, since soon as I figured it out. As soon as I started fucking with the Benadryl to the Loratadine to nothing, I was like, me and crab, we fucking with each other. I just, the taste of it, the ritual of breaking it down, all of that shit, I try to compartmentalize the murder of it all. But anyway, so recently, well, you know, over the last maybe year and a half, something like that, even probably even more recent than that, I was just like, you know what? Maybe if I don't smell the shrimp cooking, I could have shrimp if it's cooked, if it's out and it's presented to me. I'll, you know, so I forget where I was, but like, and every time I did this, I'm playing myself because I have no type of medication on me. I don't got no Loratadine, nothing on me. And I'm playing myself and I'm like oftentimes out with people. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes they know, sometimes they don't know that I'm allergic. But either way, I'm out with some people, and it's irresponsible, to be totally honest with you. But I forgot where I was. I had like a, where was I recently? I had like a fried shrimp. Somebody had fried shrimp. They was like, yo, you want one of these? And I was like, yeah, fuck. Oh, homecoming. Homecoming. So I had these crazy looking shrimp. We were at Port Calvin's. You know what I'm saying? We was at Port Calvin's and shit. And one of the homies, they ordered the whatever shrimp dish that they got, because the guy was talking it up crazy. Them shits looked amazing. Like the fry on the shrimp just looked like, okay. My people was like, yo, because it's one of those things where everything's like shareable and shit. Like, yo, get some shrimp. You want to try shrimp? I was like, yeah, you know what? And again, I don't know if they knew. I was like, let me see what it is. Now, meanwhile, mind you, we about to go to an event right after this. Take a bite, take a couple bites. Shit was good. And, you know, I'm, you know, quietly, just to myself, a little worried, a little lightweight anxious, like, oh, shit, I hope I don't play myself. Nothing happened. Long story short, same shit happened this past week. I was out with my people, you know what I mean, the fam, and then I had that jambalaya. There was quite a few shrimp in there, and I was like, dude, you are wildin'. But fortunately, nothing happened. And it was crawfish, too, so I didn't know what crawfish. That was like a, that was a wild card. I don't think I've ever had crawfish before. This wasn't even a type where you got to get it out the shell. It was already shelled, deshelled or whatever, and mixed in with the rice or whatever. Long story short, the shit was good, but the anxiety of it all kind of undermined the experience, you know. But I don't know if I'm going to be all the way back on shrimp, because I'll be honest with you, it don't really taste like nothing. I don't get the like the hype, you know what I'm saying? Like, especially, you know, around the way, like in the, you know, the people, black folks, we seem to love shrimp. Like, there's a lot of enthusiasm about, oh, you know, shit, oh, let's get the shrimp, you know what I mean? It'd be a lot. Maybe it ain't as much as it used to be when I was growing up. People were getting excited about shrimp. I think crab legs might have superseded the shrimp excitement. But when I was young, you know, like, shrimp was the thing. That was the thing. Like, that was luxury. And I couldn't really participate too much. So, but anyway, I say all that to say, yeah, when I do bite into it, you know, it's got that texture of shrimp, but it's just like, it don't really taste like shit. It tastes like whatever the seasoning is, you know, like, whether if it's battered in some shit or if it's sauteed in something, whatever, whatever. Let me ask y'all, is there anything that you are allergic to that you've been thinking about trying to see if you're truly allergic, or you stay in your lane? Or is there anything that you thought you were allergic to and then you broke it? Because I think that happens more often than not, you know, for a long time, for at least 10, 15 years. maybe even longer than that, I would, like, I would say that, like, I would stand tall on that. You know what I mean? Listen, I'm allergic to shellfish. Allergic to shellfish and penicillin. Like, I ain't fucking with no penicillin. But I'm allergic to those. Any allergies? You know, especially nowadays at the restaurants, they seem to always ask you, any allergies? You know, I'd be like, yeah, shellfish. They'd be like, all right, well, okay, this is cooked in that, but you might not want to do this, you know. But it'd always be weird because I would say, I'm allergic to shellfish, but yeah, let me get the mussels. Well, let me get the clams. It never really all the way made sense, but that's that. So I did that. I told you a couple shows. What else I do? Anything cool? I'm back in the gym. I'm back in the gym. I went ahead and copped a gym membership last year, at the end of last year. Very cliche. I was like, you know, let me get back in this. Get back in the gym or whatever, do some gym shit, you know. I've been saying I was going to do it, so I copped it back at the end of December. The entire January, I did not step foot in the gym. And the gym is not far at all from my spot. But I just, for whatever reason, I guess I was out of the habit of going. You know what I mean? And I was talking to somebody, and I was like, yeah, I ain't been in the gym. I'm probably going to go tomorrow. They was like, why don't you go today? They kind of challenged me, like, go today. I was like, you know what? I'll take you up on that. So I went. Got in there, did what I did. Going back to the gym is, every time I go back to the gym, you realize, like, the gym culture of it all. You know, and but certain gyms got different culture. You know, like if you go to like one of these upscale gyms, they have that upscale gym culture. That's a different type of vibe, like an Equinox or Beyond and things like that. You go to shit, you go to like the little Y or something that might have something, the little, or like a Blink, or which is now Pure Gym, or what's the Planet Fitness. I guess New York Sports Club is probably I don't want to say it's a tier above, but it's been there for so long. But, you know, there's certain cultures in certain gyms, you know. So the one I go to got a bit of, it got a little bit of prison yard energy with a few baddies in there, a few little, you know what I'm saying, some ladies. Like if they had a co-ed prison, you know what I'm saying? It ain't all the way prison. It's just, you know what it is? It's just, I think anybody, when people are in a setting where they get to showcase their brute strength, you know what I'm saying? It builds an environment where motherfuckers is walking around with the diesel walk. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? All of this. Maybe it's just because I ain't been in the gym in so long. So every time I go to the gym, I ain't been in a long time, I feel like I'm in the wrong neighborhood. You know, like I feel like I don't blend in. And honestly, I'm just another cat in the gym, so it ain't even that serious. But that's just me in my head. But you know, it'd be a whole lot of that. You know, and then there's the gym attire. You know what I'm saying? A spectrum of what to wear at the gym. You know what I'm saying? There's the cats that, this cats that straight wearing straight up jeans to the gym, looking wild. Cats that wear do-rags in the gym. You know what I'm saying? Cats that, you know, and then people that got like real gym clothes. You know what I mean? And you got women in there with the gym clothes. And you know, like the trend for a few years now has been the athleisure, but with the butt cheeks kind of stitched, you know what I'm saying? Stitched in to kind of enhance the cheekage, you know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, if you been in the world, you know what I'm talking about. The little, you know what I mean? The real spherical. The spherical ass athleisure out there, the enhancement joints, ass in there. What else? What else do I see going on? You realize how, like, that's a setting, you know. So often remarked about how much records. You know, there's certain settings for music, right? Strip club, grocery store, gym. You know, those are three big sectors where the location affects how you receive this music. And yeah, you hear certain records in the gym and it's just like adrenaline. It's like audio adrenaline. It's like, oh shit, I could do a little bit more on this treadmill. Or I could put, you know what, let me go put a few more plates on this shit. I'm feeling this shit, you know. And it's obviously some of the gym all-stars. DMX, he might have wrote records in the gym. His shit is gym ready. There was something I was listening to that I hadn't heard in the gym that I was like, oh, this makes perfect sense. It might have been one of these records that came out in my gym sabbatical. I call it that. This is the last I was in the gym. I took like a year off maybe. You know what I mean? Because I ain't going to lie to you. This is like a Groupon. It's like a Groupon. Once that Groupon shit was over, I looked around. I ain't seen it. I said, fuck that. And I took a bit of a sabbatical. But it's back. So I'm back with it. But anyway, yeah, man, I forget the record, but it was like, it was one of them. I was like, oh, this shit make perfect sense. This is a gym record. I didn't even think about that because I haven't heard it in this context. But yes, I'm in there. 2 days in, you know, nothing crazy. Woke up sore. Oh, hey, yo. Someone sound like Lil Rod. Hey, yo. No, woke up sore from fucking doing gym exercises. Anyway, yeah, so nah. That's some shit. I forgot. Yeah, you know, the physical, you know what I mean? All that exertion. Yeah, you know what I mean? Doing all that, lifting the weights and shit like that. Yeah, this is, especially if you ain't done it in a while. Yeah, fam, you gonna be, I thought shit was fucked up for a second. I said, oh yeah, I was in the gym. That shit was fast, you know, but it was cool. Now I gotta get my little gym shit together. Like I said, my little gym hookups, my sneakers, whatever sneakers I'm gonna rock, you know what I'm saying? Like, get my little plan together, because then now that I'm there, I kind of want to have a little program. Okay, I'm gonna do this, you know, it's legs today, I'm gonna do fucking shoulders and back on this day, do some cardio to start, you know, all of that gym talk. I'm tapping into that energy, so that's cool. Along with that, I was watching this Denzel interview. Not even a whole interview. It was like a snippet when he was talking about how he starts his day with just 30 minutes of silence. He don't go for his phone. You know, don't turn the TV on. You don't know music. It's just him just trying to be comfortable in silence. It's like, you know, you wake up in the morning, you grab your phone, you choosing chaos. You know? And I've been feeling like that for a while. Like, I'm going, picking up the phone, I go on social media, the pot is already stirred. You know, like, it's instant activation. Look at this shit. I know you should be upset about this. You see what these motherfuckers did? You know, all of that energy. I ain't even take a piss. I ain't had no coffee. I barely fucking yawned. And here I am upset, starting my day on the wrong foot. So I said, yeah, let me try to limit a little bit of that. Try to be a little deliberate about certain shit. I'm back to keeping the phone out the bedroom when I go to sleep. I leave that shit out there. And just try to just have a night's sleep, you know? I don't listen, dog. I don't listen. I'm glad y'all listen to this shit. This is just me musing. What else? What else is going on? I looked at the, I just saw that. I don't know. Shout out to whoever the photo editor is over at The Cut or New York Magazine. The person that made the decision to pair Halle Berry with Rennell Medrano to let them get in a bag. You know, that just sounds like it's this dope combo, you know. You know what I mean? You know, Rennell, she know how to lens the ladies and make them look, take them to another level, put them in a, you know what I mean? Like, just capture them in a way that just, I don't know. It's naturalistic, but then it's also just fly, right? And then you got Halle Berry, who's a perennial beauty. You know what I mean? And you got the two of them connecting. And they did it, you know, they did it for the cut. And it's a cool pictorial. It's actually less magazine pictorial than, is pictorial the right word? Is that more Playboy? I think pictorial is broad enough, right? It's not just in the, okay, listen, photo spread, whatever you want to call it. It's less magazine photo spread, but more, it looked like how they did it. It looks like stills from a film. Like just how they did it. So you could tell, which was kind of fly. What was fly about how they did it, you know, Halle being an actress, you know, it's less posing and more like acting. Like I said, it looks like stills from like a film. Like she's looking, you know, but looking in a way that it feels like you just press pause on some shit. Like she's selling the action. You know what I'm saying? It's not just like just posing to be taking a picture. It's like, oh shit, what's going on here? You know what I mean? Oh, you know, like action type of shit. Like, you know, so it's kind of cool. And then she dressed like kind of looking like a mob wife. Reminds me of like a Sharon Stone in Casino. You know what I mean? You know, little slim gowns, big furs, shit like that. You know what I mean? I don't know if there was any cigarettes in any of the photos, but it felt like that's all it was missing. It's like a little, a Virginia Slim. You know what I'm saying? Like that type of vibe. J. Cole dropped that Birthday Blizzard 26. Oh, you know what? Okay, wait. This is the week of the fall off, huh? Friday. J. Cole's album's going to come out. So I know the J. Cole fans are excited. You know what I'm saying? I'm excited. I want to hear what he's talking about. See what it is. I'm curious to see the direction, see how he, if this is the end, how he closes the chapter, how he leaves the scene, you know? I think as far as retirement albums go that I could think about, or, you know, alleged retirement albums, I think the best one was still the Black Album, where it was like, the point of this is I'm leaving. So the sentiment all the way through was like, listen, y'all ain't even going to respect me until I'm gone. Y'all ain't going to appreciate it till I leave. You know what I'm saying? But I'm still going to pop my shit on the way out. Never been a nigga this good for this long. This, you know, all of that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know any other albums that I could think of. And if I'm overlooking, I'm forgetting something, let me know. But I'm not sure how many retirement albums that I could access for reference. But I'm curious to see how J. Cole approaches that. So that's going to be the Friday. So, you know, I know the J. Cole fans, they excited or whatever. And then in, you know, anticipation or part of the rollout, because he's always been good at a good rollout. He knows how to roll out a project, knows how to activate his fan base, whether it's the Dialing the Dream shit. You know what I mean? Like, the cat has always been good at that. So he did a what is it called? Birthday Blizzard 26. Did it with DJ Clue. Tapped into the old DJ Clue energy. And I like that. A lot of cats are doing that now. Well, not a lot of cats, but I feel like, I mean, maybe the clips was the first that I could think about that really like tapped into getting the feel on this last album. You know, like using them on, what they use them on, Inglourious Basterds and something else, but just like that, you know, just the drops, just the energy that shit brings. Like they took it even further on the Cole project, even the like the low res artwork, like the little, you know what I mean, Kinko's copy looking mixtape artwork type of shit. It was like maybe 12-15 minute four freestyles. It was cool. You know what I mean? He could rap. You know that. You know I always say that shit. He could rap. But what I thought was interesting about this whole shit, and I guess they're fans, right? And it's funny because I guess a lot of the theme of what he talked about on this mixtape was just all the commentary, right? You know, because there's an... That's an ecosystem into itself, critique. you know, especially since journalism in the traditional way, whether it's like print media, especially as far as hip hop journalism goes, it's not what it used to be, right? So you see a lot of it that's in the podcast realm. You got former writers, you got just personalities, former rappers, you know, people, pundits, everybody kind of weighing in and giving their opinion and their take on the music and whatever else is going on in the music scene, the culture, right? So, and some of these people are fans, you know what I mean? Like, you know, shit, that's where a lot of it comes from. You're just a fan of it all. But what I noticed, and it's funny because I'm not as invested or even as like triggered or whatever, maybe is another word for it, but I ain't wanna say activated again. I done said about four times. But you know, like I'm not as like affected or pissed off as some of these people are in the way of, you know, J. Cole did the apology, right? And ever since he apologized, a lot of people was like, well, does he have the, it's not opportunity. Is he in a place to where he could still pop shit and still say that he's one of them, still top three out of the, you know, the big three, the new big three? Can he still take shots? Can he still talk his shit? You know what I'm saying? Like, well, he ducked the smoke. You know, part of me, and I, you know, at first I'm like, he was saying all that. If he's saying anything crazy, it could sound delusional because you had the opportunity to really, you know, go all out and stand on what you've been saying, but you chilled, right? And I think that was a seismic shift for many, especially of a certain age in hip hop, to be like, all right, your wellness, I get it, your spirit, you know what I mean? Fair enough. No doubt. Do you, brother. Do you. I respect it. I don't agree, but I respect it. It was a lot for a lot of people to just say, you know what? I respect it. Okay, fine. But at the same time, then it's like the double back, and it's like, hold on, motherfucker. And I don't think anything has been really pointed, but there's been like this discourse online where these people are very upset. It's almost like they want to take a class action suit out on this nigga. Like, who is he to come back and talk all of this shit after he apologized? He shouldn't be able to do that. That shit, like, they ready to, Your Honor. You know, it's a lot of that. A lot of fucking outrage. And I'm not all in the outrage. You know, I actually found myself stepping back and looking at the shit for a second and said, you know what? I actually respect the fact, because he knew what was going to happen. The man is self-aware. You know what I'm saying? He knew what was going to happen. And I think that I respect the fact that as much as these people are fans, he still don't let them to police his creative output. I'm going to do what the fuck I want to do. And y'all going to listen to this shit or you're not going to listen to this? I mean, it is what it is. Nigga, it's my last album anyway. And these motherfucking streams, these motherfuckers, we ain't making no real money off the stream shit. I don't know. Let me say, I don't know, maybe niggas is. Maybe people got different types of deals. Long story short, I'ma do whatever the fuck I wanna do, cause this is my music. I'm putting this shit out. If you don't like me talking shit, then don't listen. But if you wanna hear some shit talking, I might have it on here. Nigga, I might fucking make a song about trees, nigga. You know what I'm saying? Don't let me go get an Andre 3000 feature and have that nigga hit the fucking flute for 16 bars and piss everybody off. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? It should be a so-called no apologies, but he already apologized. But anyway, it was just very interesting. I was just looking at that shit. And it's always interesting when I look at like these new ecosystems that have, you know, been developed in the new realm. I mean, shit, I'm fucking on a podcast talking about this shit. But then there's the YouTube reviewers, and then there's the motherfuckers that be on YouTube reviewing or critiquing what they heard of the podcast. It's like so many new conversations going on. It's kind of interesting, but shit, nigga, it's only one conversation and you in that bitch right now. Anyway, I watched a good portion of that Mike Will Made It versus Hit Boy versus. And that shit was, that shit was like watching paint dry, dog. It was terrible. And it was, these are big, they both got big records. I mean, Mike Will has better records. I think Hit Boy, I don't know what he was playing. I'm looking at my little notes, my little scorecard. I started trying to do the rounds. I got to the third round, and I guess I tuned out after that. I mean, I watched it a little longer, but I wasn't invested. Mike Will won the first three rounds to me immediately. I think the only note that I had about that shit that really kind of made me look great, I mean, made me realize they probably both be in the studio too much and maybe disconnected from the world. But both of them played songs with Nicki verses, and them shits, I don't think they resonated. But you know what, though? Honestly, that crowd was terrible. That crowd was just a bunch of, I don't even think it was many women. I don't think it was any women in the crowd. It was a couple women on stage who looked like they were hired to be on stage. They looked like they was really, like, fully involved, like they wanted to be there. They looked like, yo, here's my rate. I'll be on stage. You know what I'm saying? I'll wear some fly shit. But in the audience, it just looked like a bunch of dudes just standing around, some of them with their cameras, you know, recording what was going on in the thing, you know, mouthing the words, but there wasn't no real energy. And it wasn't the energy that could kind of compliment the songs being played. You know what I'm saying? Like, they brought Juicy J, Do Bands Make a Dance, and they just had, I think, maybe one or two girls there. They throwing all this money on the stage, a bunch of dudes on the stage. You know what I'm saying? Dudes in the, it didn't match what was going on. Like, that was the thing. You like, damn, this shit don't, these motherfuckers, they made the records, but this is a hard watch. This is a hard watch. I was like, damn, this ain't good at all. I don't know how long I lasted. I saw when they brought out Big Sean. I saw when Juicy J came out. So Hit Boy brought his son out. His son looked bored from the door. But that's little kids. Little kids are so funny. Little kids do not realize the moment. Little kids don't. You don't realize the moment until you're probably about 13, I think. Maybe a little early if something traumatic happened. You know what I'm saying? You get evicted or somebody, one of your family members die. No shit, this is heavy. But typically they be now, you know, nowadays they all in their tablet. You know what I'm saying? Like that motherfucker, he did not care. He did not care. He was like, yo, you know what I'm saying? My son in this bitch. You know what I'm saying? My little man's here. Little man is not even acknowledging any type of applause or, you know what I mean, energy thrown his way. Little man could be backstage chilling. But you know, it was what it was. It was what it was boring. If I'm being honest, it was boring. I'm sorry. You know, they both were talented producers, but that shit, if that was the first versus after a while, that wasn't the comeback versus. You need something else. You need something else. I had an idea I was just joking with a friend of mine. I was like, sadly, I knew if I said if it was Hit Boy and Mike Will Made It on Versus, he wasn't gonna watch. He was like, I was like, yo, I was in the group chat, y'all watching Versus? He was like, who? You know, this is all after the fact. The whole shit damn near over. Who's on the Versus? I was like, it was Pharrell versus Chad Hugo. And then he was like, oh, that shit sounds interesting. I was like, nah, nigga. Sadly, that's gonna be in the courtroom. That's not gonna be on Versus. Oh man, we'll talk more about that in a second. Actually, shit, we're going to talk about that now. We're going to talk about the Grammys. I watched a little bit of it. I caught the tail end of the Grammys. I didn't see much of it. I caught probably the last hour, I guess, maybe hour and a half. I forget where I came in at. Somebody was, who had won? It was like, I don't say an upset, but somebody who I didn't think was going to win was in the middle of, oh, I came in right as Billie Eilish won like record of the year against a bunch of records that I'd heard that I and I didn't hear the Billie Eilish. No disrespect, because I ain't, you know, not no disrespect. I mean, but listen, I can't really speak in an informed manner because I haven't heard the records. So I don't even know if the record was good or not. Long story short, I came where she came in. She hit the, you know, the censored fuck ice. You know what I mean? Which was good to see. By this time, Kendrick had scooped up mad Grammys. You know what I'm saying? I didn't see none of his speeches until a little later. But I came right in time. I came right in time for the Dr. Dre Grammy Award. I don't know what it's called. The Lifetime Achievement, the Dr. Dre Award now. It's, I don't know who's it been given to. It's been given to Jay-Z. It's been given to, I don't know. I think it was the fourth annual. I think it was maybe Eminem might have got it, I think. I'm not sure. But, you know, all of the big dogs. You know what I mean? The Dundatas. So, anyway, this year it was Pharrell getting the Dr. Dre Big Dog Award. You know what I mean? And he had Q-Tip presented to him. I would imagine that was Pharrell who asked for Q-Tip, who requested Q-Tip. It just made very much, it made a lot of sense. I mean, Pharrell is, admittedly, and I believe he's even said it, it's like fruit from that tree, for sure. You could see the direct inspiration, you know? So, Q-Tip gives him the award. He bows to Q-Tip, which was kind of, it's always interesting. Pharrell be doing a whole lot of the bowing, so much so that you be like, all right, nigga, how much of this is, like, authentic? You know what I mean? Or we just you know, bowing ass, nigga. Like, you know what I mean? But it's, I guess, it's, I get it. It makes sense. You know, all praises due. Salute, you know what I mean? Like, you are fucking, what they call that, North Star. You inspired me, all of that. But I guess it's a weird thing, you know? Because it's funny when, like, certain people do certain things, then other people start to do certain things, and then you see people bowing to other people in, like, situations where there don't need to be no bowing going on. It's like, all right, bro, who you seen bowing? Now you out here bowing, and this shit is uncomfortable. Nobody wants to get bowed to. You know what I mean? Like, that, you know, it's like, come on, what we doing? But anyway, bow to it. Like, get out of here. Go ahead, say your award. So they do, like, a little montage package about his career, and it felt weird to see, I don't want to call it erasure, because it's, you know, those who know, know. If you know, you know. But, you know, like, anybody that's been a fan of Pharrell from back in the day, the Neptunes, knows Chad Hugo was a 50-50 partner for a good portion of those hits. So, like, to see it, like, it was just glaring, you know, and people fall out, you know what I'm saying? This is, and it could be disappointing many times, whether it's Jay and Dane, whether it's Cam and Jim, whether it's fucking Pete Rock and CL Smooth, whether it's whomever and whomever, you know what I mean? I heard Bert and Ernie wasn't really talking no more. But, you know, any of these, when people fall out, I mean, that's just, some people evolve. Some people, they go in opposite directions. That's life, right? But it just felt so glaring. It's like when I went to the Book of Hov exhibit at the Brooklyn Library, and there, all of them photos of Jay-Z, there's not one photo of Dame Dash in that whole shit. You know what I mean? Like, I know y'all don't fuck with each other, but y'all, the history is the history, you know? But, you know, it is what it is. That's their thing. But it was just like, damn, you know, sheesh. It's just, I don't know. And I guess it says more about me. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost in the same bin of, you know, an old club you used to go to back in the day is now, I was about to say a Dwayne Reed, but Dwayne Reed ain't even Dwayne Reed no more. It's a fucking Walgreens or whatever. It's like, you know, oh, this spot, that spot used to be this, but it's not that anymore. And it's just like totems of your childhood or some of your formative years, or, you know, just moments that meant a lot to you, you know? And obviously, it don't go no deeper than that. You know what I'm saying? I'm not in the camp, you know, and people fall out, you know? People stop fucking with each other. But it was just like, damn. It just kind of, you know, it just felt like for people that were, that are fans of the Neptune since way back, since the late 90s, you know, since when they first started, when they first came out, it's like, yo, hold on, something looks a little different, you know? And they were heavy on, like, the these more recent years, the Louis, you know, that type of thing and all of this other shit and the happy era, and, you know. But, yeah. Anyway, so there was that. Then the other thing that stood out besides Kendrick's pick, which is very Black History Month, nigga had to pick, you know what I mean? That was cool when they came. They won for Luther. It was crazy. Fucking Cher. Talk about Luther Vandross. Luther Vandross been dead for a while. Cher, stop it. Come on now. You know what I mean? What the fuck is going on? I know that young dude ain't got you twisted like that. You know Luther ain't around. Luther Vandross. But I guess she just Luther. She's so Luther. Whatever the fuck. But anyway. They won. They won a bunch of Grammys and shit like that. The Clips won for... They won for the record with Kendrick. That's how you win a Grammy. You get down or lay down. So anyway, so the boom. Lauryn Hill helms the D'Angelo Roberta Flack tribute, which was assorted. It was a lot of singers, a lot of people. I don't remember much. I was about to rewatch it before I did the pod, just so I could kind of speak, you know, speak to what I, you know, what was good, whatever, what I appreciated about it. I'm just going to go off of what I remember. And what I remember was fucking Bilal did Bilal. Bilal killed that shit. Bilal came out, and it wasn't even for a whole long time, but Bilal got to do Untitled. And I forgot who, it was a couple people that went before Bilal, but it was like, all right, let's get it. You know what I mean? Because the thing also is, one thing I got to remark on, Lauren, and I've said this before, Lauren be, I don't know what's been going on recently, but Lauren kind of be rushing through the set like she got her car running outside. You know what I'm saying? Leon Thomas, come on, Leon, let's do it. Let's do it, Leon. All right, next. Lucky Day. Come on, Lucky Day. She sound like a fucking auctioneer. Okay, we got Lucky Day coming up for 16 bars. Come on, 16 bars. Sing that song. Okay. Here, we here. We paying tribute. Roberta Flack, come on. Oh, well, this was for Roberta Flack. My bad. Shaka Khan, come on out here. Shaka Khan, hurry up. Let's get it. Where Wyclef at? Wyclef, come on now, nigga. What you doing? You coming down from that? All right, Wy. Come on now. Come on, Clef, let's do it, all right, sing that song, okay. Anyway, in the harried energy of that, Bilal came out, said, y'all ain't gonna rush me, I'm gonna do my Bilal shit. And when I seen Bilal, I was like, y'all, I didn't know what song they was gonna give him, but once I heard the opening bars to, you know, the few notes to Untitled, I was like, oh, shit. This nigga about to go crazy. Because that's one thing Bilal was known for doing. The first time I ever seen Bilal perform was, shit, I guess it was 1999. It was at BAM. And the Roots was doing, they were doing, I guess, a tribute. Guess that you want to do it. Or a cover, tribute cover of Prince's 1999. So maybe it was 98 going into 99. It might have been 98 going into 99, actually. And what record did fucking Bilal do? Was it International Lover? Maybe it was. It was either the Little Red Corvette. Or International Lover. One of them joints. I forget exactly which one it was. But anyway, that nigga put his foot in that fucking record. This is the first time I ever seen it. I never knew who this kid was. It was like, blah! When he came out, you know, he could do all of them Prince-type hysterics. You know what I'm saying? Like, vocally and like just performance wise. Like he could go all out with no shame, super shameless, hitting the fucking notes. Like it's crazy. So much so, rumor has, I think Prince kind of put a low-key embargo on him. Like, yo, don't be singing my shit out here while I'm still alive, nigga, because you killing me. You know what I mean? Like, nigga, you good at this shit. Oh, nigga, you fucking with my paper. Allegedly. I don't know how true that is, but that rumor has it that Prince was like, chill. even so, I think Bilal said this before D'Angelo passed. But Bilal used to sing backup for D'Angelo, and D'Angelo had to fire him. Like, yo, dog, you don't want to be background. You need to be up front. Like, you are singing like a motherfucker that needs to have, you an A mic. You know what I'm saying? You ain't a pip. You know, so anyway, he sang Untitled. And it was, you know, for Bilal, not even for, yeah, for Bilal, there was still some restraint. He did what he needed to do. Let y'all know I could do this shit. There's other people that got to get on. And, you know, Lauren ain't fucking around. She about to, come on now. It was a little bit of restraint. I ain't going to take them to all the way church. I ain't going to, you know what I'm saying, the male equivalent of kicking my shoes off or some Patti LaBelle shit, let you know. But the people in the crowd, those people knew. You know what I mean? That little bit of moment, it was enough. You know, he killed that shit. Bilal, that first album was so fire. Second album, what was it? Second round, I don't know. But he got a little, like, jazzy and, like, left. I don't want to say Sarai-ish, but, like, or not Sunrise-ish, both. Got a little left, a little bit more eclectic. And the vocal stuff, it was there, but it wasn't as, like, rhythmic, you know what I'm saying, as it once was. But I still fuck with him, but like that first album was one of them. That shit was, man, I remember sometimes, I remember seeing this motherfucker do that shit live. That was one of them. You know what I mean? That, yeah, dog. Anyway, that was probably the highlight to me of the Grammys. I'm trying to think what else. I don't think Clip should have done, what is it, So Far Ahead? To close out the show, it just kind of wasn't the best. I mean, if you're going to do the John Legend joint, do the John Legend joint. Do that joint. Like that, I only call it the John Legend joint. I don't even know the name. You know, the one about the family, about the parents. I just feel like that's such a real record with heart, even though they've been doing it a lot. But it just felt like, was it Birds Don't Fly? Birds Don't Sing? I felt like that would have been a nice way, especially if you're going to be the last performance of the Grammys. I thought that could have been one. Or shit, if Kendrick there and y'all just won the damn Grammy for the record y'all did, do that shit. Kendrick look like he ain't trying to perform, no. He chilling. He like, y'all go ahead and do what the fuck y'all want to do. Kendrick slowly turning into the Hove of it all. I mean, he already got Hove's record for the most Grammys, most rapper with the most Grammys. Kendrick come outside just to show his face. Y'all ain't going to be working me. Yeah, I mean, he got that air. Like, listen, y'all ain't gonna be working me, man. I'm gonna come get these statues. I'm gonna get in this Grand National. I'm gonna speed the fuck off. All right, whatever y'all want to do while I'm here, I'll take a couple flicks. I'll give a few daps, but now I don't know if I'm fucking with any verses. I mean, I ain't even got the Super Bowl this week. I'm chilling. Hopefully that nigga's in the studio. And quiet as kept, I wasn't disappointed at the fact that he won Rap Album of the Year. You know what I'm saying? I know a lot of people really wanted Clips to win, and that was a hell of an album. But like I said before, I think GNX, especially coming off as heavy as Mr. Morale was and that fucking battle with Drake, to just put some shit out there that was like just mad West Coast but so replayable. That shit had slaps on it. That shit was a banger. That shit was a banger. You know, sometimes Kendrick could get dense. That shit was not dense. That shit was just, it was just where it needed to be. And I think he deserved that shit for sure. So that was good. I saw the Tyler performance. The Tyler performance was cool too. It was good to see Regina King. I do want to say rest in peace to Catherine O'Hara. Oh, man, that's a loss. That's a loss for sure, man. I like Catherine O'Hara. She's just ubiquitous. She was in so many different things. You know, it's funny. She's done so much that while many might still, many of a certain generation associate her with Home Alone, I really don't. I don't even think, it's like, oh, right, she wasn't Home Alone. It's kind of like an afterthought. I look at her like from like, you know, I seen her pop up in a lot of those Christopher Guest movies. I didn't watch Schitt's Creek like that, so I can't even speak to that. I really enjoyed the studio. She was in the studio, but what first jumped off, the first memory I had about, not memory, but the first thing I thought about when I heard that she passed, what I saw that she passed, I was thinking about the bit that her and Seth Rogen did at the Golden Globes maybe 2 years ago. And it was just a quick little, they about to present, I think, best female actor. But they did this whole bit about both being from Canada, and they got their own film resume from Canada and all these little Canadian awards they won. And they kind of just, it's like they kind of trying to top each other with the, and I'm sure it was written, but the way they performed, it felt real present. Like it felt in the moment. It felt like some of that could have been improv, whatever it was. But her comedic timing has always been so ill. She could go for the joke. She could play the straight woman, like, and just be chill. Her delivery was always just real down the middle. You know what I mean? Like she was really funny. And then I was looking through her IMDb. She stayed working. She worked. Like she was on, yeah, she was on some Rihanna shit, nigga. She was work. Like it was bananas. And it's funny because I remember watching After Hours a few months ago. She was in that shit. That shit was back in like 85. You know, she been getting up, getting at it, you know. So, you know, salute to her. Rest in peace, you know. KD signed a deal with, was it CeraVe? Some lotion deal. You know, KD's notoriously ashy, so he turned that shit into some money. First NBA player with a lotion deal. You know what I mean? Came from, you know, it was all from slander and jokes. And now that shit is some cash. And that's I like that. Nice little pivot. I like the kind of, I guess, the viral announcement they got. This, I don't know who did the copy on that with the tweets and shit, but they got one. They called it a skincident. A skincident was mad funny. Anyway. Oh, I was at the grocery store. I seen a motherfucking white man with an ice hat on. And I'm pretty sure he wasn't ice. I don't know. Maybe he could, because I feel like ice is whomever's going to sign up, right? But it felt like kind of like how some white cats, they go buy like NYPD merch, go to Canal Street or whatever, go get themselves a hat or a sweatshirt that says NYPD on it. They walk around proudly wearing that shit. This motherfucker looked like such an asshole walking around with that fucking ice hat. It was, and I ain't gonna lie, that shit had me a little, not shook, but like uncomfortable. Like, yo, what the fuck is going on in here? You know what I mean? Is this about to, because I'm like, this is my grocery store. I like fucking with them. I hope they ain't complicit. I hope they ain't in this bitch running plays with ice. But this motherfucker had an ice hat on. I was like, yo, that shit look. And he so fucking corny. He looked like such a fucking cornball. Lastly, before we get into this industry recap, we'll get into this industry recap in a second. So, you know, if you don't want no spoilers, I'll let you know. You can step off. I just want to say, it's not even an honorable mention, but I just want to say salute to Queens and their pizza. You know, a lot of talk about pizza in the city, and, you know, you always hear about Brooklyn, and you hear about sometimes the Bronx, you hear about little, you know, places in Manhattan, even Staten Island. And, I mean, you hear about Queens, but I don't know if you hear about Queens as much, because I don't even want to say real ones, no. But I could just say from my own experience, as I was thinking about it, a good bulk of some of my favorite pizza shops are in Queens. A good bulk. I'd say just off the top of the head, New Park, which is right there on the border, but like New Park, one of my favorite pizza shops. Danny's is good. Amore is good. Oh, shit. What's this? Rosario's is good. I finally got to go to Margarita on Jamaica Avenue, finally. I don't know if that's the same pizza shop that Jukebox be going into on Raising Cane. Now I want to double back and see if it is. But anyway, I went and got a slice at Margarita, and that shit was fire. That shit was real fucking good. At least the type of pizza I like. I like a good, I like a nice, a good amount of sauce, and I like a lot of cheese. Not extra cheese, but I like that to know that there's some cheese on that bitch. You know what I'm saying? And they make a good cheesy, saucy-ass slice. So much so, I almost doubled back and grabbed another one, but I knew I was playing. I was like, D, relax. Because I had just eaten some other shit. Oh, shout out to Cloudy Donut. I was in Brooklyn. I did a whole little run through. One day. I just was driving around hitting a few spots, and I went to Cloudy Donut. Shout out to my man D over there, and I had their, what's that shit I had? What was the flavor I had? I think it was a blood orange. I figured blueberry blood or some shit. You know, they their shit be like, it be, I don't know. It's all the shits are good. I ain't gonna lie. And don't ask that, man. Don't ask D. Don't say, yo, which is the better dunk? Because he cook all them shits. He's like, these is all dimes. That's exactly what he said. These are all dimes. All of these shits are good. Everything, wherever is, you can't go nowhere wrong. And to be totally honest with you, I don't think I've ever had a whack donut then. I've had quite a few. But yeah, I forget the one I had. It was an orange, blood orange, some shit. It was fire. It was good as hell. But I just had that because I was just in the area. And I was like, yo, shit, I'm so close to Cloudy Donut. Let me go ahead and fall through. Because, you know, that shit is kind of a hike from where I be at. So I said, let me get that. And then I was on my way to Margarita. So I was like, you doing a whole lot. Now you just had a donut. Now you about to have two slices of pizza. And I felt proud of myself because I literally was on real boomerang time. Like, I walked out the spot and then walked back in. Because it's one of them spots where they got the little counter. You know what I mean? You eat your pizza. I was like, let me eat my shit right here at the counter. You know what I'm saying? Let me dig in. Let me enjoy life. Let me chill. I'm parked illegally, but I could see my shit through the door, but let me sit here and really get into it. So it was so easy to be like, yo, let me get another slice to go. And I said, nah, it was tough. I was ready to do it. And I felt great that I did not, but yeah. So shout out to Queens. Cause y'all got some good ass pizza for sure. All right. Industry. This one, I don't know if this recap's going to be as convoluted as the last one, as last week. And, some of the shit that I said last week was wrong. Some of the names I gave was the wrong names and shit. I was reading the recap, but I was like, oh, damn, that was the wrong name. I'm sorry. I was a lot of misinformation in that last shit. Sorry, y'all. Hopefully this will make up for it. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not going to do a whole lot of beat by beat type of shit. You know, this is more shit that I noticed. I'll do a little bit of like summary, but it's kind of just some of these notes that I took. Okay. All right. So here we go. So first off, we're season four, episode four. Episode is 1,000 Utes, One Marilyn. So we open up, we realize, we looking at it, they showing that like Stern Tao. They're really betting the farm on this James Dyker, you know, expose piece that's supposed to come out. I think it's about the Sunderland deal or something like that. Like, just they need him to break this shit so that could help them short the tender, you know, the tender stock or whatever. And it's kind of, I don't say in jeopardy, but it's not guaranteed. And at the same time, James is trying to put distance between, you know, him and them, you know what I mean? Just so there's no corruption, don't to compromise the shit. Or, I mean, I think that could be inside a traded or whatever. So he's trying to stay as ethical as he can, even though that's kind of hustling backwards. It's beyond, listen, you done did enough. It's going too far already. Like, they're past the ethical interaction, but, you know, I guess they trying to calibrate, bump the brakes or whatever the fuck. And it's a little too late. And they both, on both sides, realize it, you know? We start to see that, like, Henry's starting to feel himself a little bit at Tender. Like, he's starting to really get comfortable with his role as CEO. you know, as the, as you know what I mean, the HNIC or the HYTIC. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's trying to get back into his, he's starting to feel, starting to put his confidence suit back on. It's still fitting a little baggy. He got to get it, you know, he got to get it tailored. But he's starting to, you know, he's starting to get it together, got his blazer on, you know, fixing his collar, about to tie his tie up. He's starting to come back to who he was, you know, and he's you know, he's kind of barking at the people. What's going on? You know, because the thing is, I don't want to call him a figurehead, but it's kind of a bit of a figurehead capacity, because it feels though as Whitney is running the show, and Whitney ain't gonna really let you know everything that's going on. That motherfucker's slimy. Anyway, cut till we see Rishi. Now he's selling coke out of car, but he still want to be in the game. He's selling coke to some guy, and he's peeping what my man got on. He's like, oh, I could tell you're not really top tier in the trading game based on, you know what I'm saying, the little chalk stripes on your tie. I could tell you got the wrong tie. You're not a real player. You know what I'm saying? Just to let the cat know, listen, I might be selling coke out my whip right now, but I was one of them. I was one of them. Ask about me. So he got that. Sweet Pea the Sleuth is using her sex worker ways as kind of a Trojan horse to get to Jonah. You know, like to get Jonah on the phone. She says, yeah, I got a line out to him. And, you know, and Harper's like, is he replying? She's like, oh, he replying. I was like, what? So, yeah, why he's replying is because she's baiting him with that, you know, with that old salaciousness. You know what I'm saying? Baiting him, thinking he going to get something, you know, the flesh. You know what I'm saying? But, nah, she wants some intel. And so she finally get him on the phone. Jonah's in the middle of the strip club, but you could tell Jonah's still tight about the Whitney shit. So once he realizes, he's like, oh, okay. Oh, you, okay. You duped me, but I see that you know what's really going on. And I see that you have the goal to destroy whatever's going on at Tender. Listen, I'm going to give you some information, but if I give you this information, and I know you already hit me with the flim flam, you make sure you bury this motherfucker. I think he said so much. So he bury him so that he can't even have no kids. I like it. It was a slick line. I forget exactly what it was, man. The writing is always slick. That's one thing I love about industry. They're going to give you some lines, some one-liners. I might even have a couple pulled to the side. But yeah, so there's that. You seeing that as it's been a lot, I mean, as it's been for the shit, the duration of the relationship, the Yasmin and Henry dynamic, she's like his customato. You know what I'm saying? She's trying to get him in the fight, you know, challenging him, like, really, like, yo, nah, you need to get on point. I see it in you. You need to get it on point. It ain't always uplifting. Sometimes it's like, yo, listen, fuck is you doing? You know what I'm saying? Like, she's like that. He's leaning in, you know, like, nah, uh-uh. Nah, we've come too far. You know what I mean? I didn't marry a motherfucker that wasn't that motherfucker. So let me know. If you're not going to be that motherfucker, let me know, because I go get my coat and get the fuck out of here. It's a lot of that type of energy there, too. So there's that. You also see that based on, like I said last week, based on the opposite sides of the deal, Yasmin and Harper's probably going to come to a head in some capacity. They already, you know, there's somebody sent out a PI or whatever. So there's already a photo of Harper and Diker walking in the park. So for all to see. So that's going to be weaponized a little later. Rishi, we're seeing now the cost, I guess, or the consequences of everything that happened with Rishi's wife being killed due to Rishi's gambling debt. We see that Rishi's wife's mother is putting him through it. You know, like she ain't fucking with him, and she realizes the whole reason that her daughter's dead, and for good reason. You know, you got my daughter killed doing this dumb shit. You know what I mean? Being out here fucking placing bets that you can't back. ass betting or whatever, you know, and all that shit got my daughter killed. But rather than being like overtly hostile, she's kind of hiding it within like Christian morality. But then she's also doing shit in the same play, like taking his son, like taking, you know, Rishi don't have custody of his son. If he gets to see his son, it's going to be a monitored visit. The son don't really even know Rishi like that. You know, the son looked like he might be about 2 or 3. And their most recent interaction, the mother-in-law who Rishi has saved in the phone as cow-in-law. So it ain't, you know, they don't really rock with each other. She's like, yo, you know, I changed his name. I need you to sign off for the name change. So now we can move him around. We can get him a passport, whatever, whatever. And he's like, well, listen, let me ask you a question. Will I be able to see my son? And she was like, yeah, you know, every so often. It's like, will I ever be able to see my son alone? And she was like, well, that'll probably never happen. You know what I mean? Like, let's be real, Pop. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're a wild card. I can't trust you. I already lost my daughter. I'm not gonna lose my grandson fucking with you. You're a fuck up in my eyes. But the Lord don't see you how I see you. The Lord has greater vision, so I won't condemn you. She hit you with that. Which is crazy. You know, that's harder to take. You know what I'm saying? Like, you hit me with the Christian double talk. Okay, so like in this episode, basically, Tender is still trying to, you know, establish themselves. We see Tender is in partnership with Pierpoint. Henry feels a way about the partnership with Pierpoint because Pierpoint is kind of who fucked him up with Lumen? I think his name. I forget the name of his endeavor, but Pierpoint was the reason that they fucked up. I think that was it Ranja? I forget who it was. So he kind of feels a way about that. But anyway, long story short, they got to do like an upfront. They got to do like a presentation where he's going to be the one to kind of steer the company into the future. And it's like, yo, you know, he's got to, you know, he's going to have to speak. You know what I mean? He's got to speak. He's going to have to sell this company. And again, like I said, he's just getting his confidence back. But this motherfucker is shaky, like a Jenga game, you know, with the same level of suspense. You don't know. You don't know. Like, he's like a pilot with a little bit of liquor on his breath. You know what I'm saying? You don't know if you're going to crash or land fucking with him right now. The prelude to Henry taking the stage at this big conference, basically, I guess, the debut, his role with Tender and roll out Tender 2.0 to investors and media and everything. And Diker's in the audience, and so is Harper. And I think Harper was invited by Yasmin because she want to keep her close. You know what I mean? Let you see the scale of what we doing. And just to let you know that little shit you got with my man over at FinTech, y'all ain't going to take us down. And then Diker's there because he's like on the hunt. He wants to really expose this company. On the way or backstage, right before Henry's to go on, you know, Haley pulls up on Yasmin and was kind of like, yo, you know, I've been feeling kind of uncomfortable about what happened, you know, with you and your husband. You know, I don't know. I just kind of, I feel a little anxious. I mean, Diker also is in the audience, and I feel like he took advantage of me, and I feel like, you know, I've just been being taken advantage of. You know what I'm saying? And I kind of said this last week, like, is this going to turn into a Me Too thing? Did Me Too go over the pond? Is it the same level of concern? Well, she's from Calabasas, so she bringing that, those American rights over there. And she's like, listen, we might have a problem. And now we realize that Haley is, and we're going to even see a little bit more, but Haley is just as manipulative as Yasmin, you know? And the funny thing was, I forget, I'm trying to find my man who reached out. one of the listeners. Damn, I can't find my man. Shout out to you, dog. I don't see you in here. Anyway, he hit me with the thing, like, basically, yo, does Haley have the upper hand? And at first I was like, I don't know if she got the upper hand. I still think she's young, naive, she kinda on the ascent. You know what I'm saying? I think that Yasmin is savvy, manipulative. She's been in the game for a while. She's taken some L's. She kind of knows how to navigate way more than Haley. But shit, whoa, let me find out. Haley got some shit in her bag. So Haley kind of throws that out there. Yasmin handles it like, listen, this is what you wanted. You know what I mean? If I'm not mistaken, I think you approached us. She kind of already getting her story together, but she could feel the heat of this could be a problem. We got a few little problems, and we are on the launch pad. We don't need that many problems. But the thing about what my man say on Game of Thrones, chaos is a ladder. And Haley see that shit. So she putting her bid in, too, even if it's a scare tactic. So, you know, as unpredictable as Henry could be, Henry, you know, he has a chop up with Yasmin, but he also has a chop up with Whitney. And it's like a real deal chop. And there's a moment where one of my notes, I was like, now is Whitney yay or is he just a close talker? Because, I mean, he like right up on Henry, like he gazing into his eyes. I guess he's just like, whatever's going to take to fucking put the wind in this man's sails, I'm ready to do it. But it just it had the tension of like, they might start kissing. Y'all let me know. Am I bugging? But anyway, and there was another moment there too. We'll talk about that in a second. But anyway, so we don't know. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. Is Henry going to fold or is he going to fly? Henry goes out. He's reading the prompter that my man, the comms guy, I forget his name, Robbins or whatever, the comms guy wrote. And Yasmin was like, his words are going to sound hollow in your mouth. You're like, hey, his words are going to sound, they're going to be dead. You know what I mean? Like, breathe life into it. You know, like, speak from the heart type shit. And long story short, he's saying the things for the prompter. And you could kind of tell, like, the crowd is tepid. They don't really know. And then he pivots. And he gets a little bit more personal. Yo, y'all seen me fail. You know, I come from privilege. This, that, and the other thing. And then the comms director is in the back like, yo, he's laying it a little on thick. Do you think they're going to buy it? And Yasmin was like, if he buys it, they're going to buy it. So I like that. She still be having faith in him. You know what I'm saying? She's still unified with him. And then also, that comms director, she don't really fuck with him because he like to play it safe. And her offense is definitely no huddle. She ain't giving a fuck. She's going all out. And we see that a couple times in this thing. Long story short, he does the little personal pivot, does a little testimony, you know what I mean? And, you know, he pulls that crowd in, and he wins. Like, they love him. Ah! You know, it wasn't no standing ovation. It's a fucking tech conference. But, you know, they give him applause and shit, and they're excited. Cut to Henry doing the meet and greet. The people are there. They asking all types of questions. Here come Diker coming through with the questions. They like, yo, that's the guy from FinTech. That's the guy that put out the hit piece. And he is pressing Henry. So what does Tinder do? Tell me, what does it do? And this, that, and the other thing. But what's up with you and the people out in the crowd and this, that, and the other thing? Whatever, like going in, hitting him with like a five-piece questions. He had fucking Henry in the blender. Whitney stepped up. Whitney got crossed. You know what I mean? Whitney ain't touch earth, but it was bad. Diker stepped off. But lo and behold, like I said, Yasmin, contrary to their comms director, she said, let's go aggressive. Let's go aggressive. Let's leak that photo of Harper and him. Let's plan a story about these people trying to undermine Tinder. Let's go on the offense. Let's not be coy. And the comms director, I was like, I don't know if Whitney would want to do that. Whitney's on the speakerphone like, no, don't speak for me. I want to do that. So, boom, they do that. Turns out it's just enough. Fucking they even say the nigga Diker is, you know, they say Diker's a damn drug addict. So his editor, Ed, the editor, which is kind of funny, Ed brings him into the office. He shows him what's about to run. He asks him the questions, you know, and he said some smooth. He said like a nice little piece of sage advice. He said, "Yo, I used to lie when I was young. I was lying a lot when I was young. And then I stopped lying as I got older, and my life got so much better." And I'm paraphrasing it, but the delivery was real fortune cookie. But it was real. He's like, "Dog, you out here moving desperate. You know what I'm saying? You doing too much, and you've gone way past the ethical on plenty of occasions." Fucking Haley is like, "Yo, you assaulted her." You know what I'm saying? That's coming out. That could come out. So listen, I have to let you go. I'm sorry. I had to let you go. I think you're talented. I think you're problematic. I think that, you know, the way that you are moving out here is like you got no brakes. So I got to let you go because you're a liability. And you know what's so funny is like the journalist getting fired from their story or from their beat or from their paper. It mirrors the old trope of the detective getting fired at the police station. You know what I'm saying? "Give me your gun. Give me your badge. You're over, Murphy. It's done." And it's like, that's when it should take off. Because now I don't have to worry about fair play. I don't got no handcuffs on. I could get down and dirty. And now we about to get with it. At least that's what I'm thinking, right? But shit, we cut to motherfucking... cut to a little later, you see my man, what we going to talk about, we cut to Diker a little later, this nigga sad doing coke. So maybe he was a drug addict. I didn't know he was a drug addict because I remember when he was in the party with Haley, I think she gave him something and he put it in his pocket. So I thought maybe he was, you know, trying not to, maybe he relapsed when he lost his job. And I was just thinking about the spectrum of coke heads. You know, you often see the glamour of coke, right? You often see the people like high life, you know what I'm saying? Big money, doing their thing, snorting huge lines, and you know. And every so often you see the sad coke. You know what I'm saying? The sad coke is definitely not the best advertisement. They need to show more sad coke. But anyway, Whitney brings the comms director in and brings Yasmin in and basically tells the comms director, "Listen, we're going to split your role in half. So y'all both are co-heads of the communications department." My man flat out says, "Listen, I'm not working with somebody that has no ability." He flat out said, "Listen, I'm not working with her. She don't know how to do the job. That's not going to happen. That there's no reason for that." So after that, like after he says that, Whitney was like, "You know what? I knew that your ego wasn't going to allow you to be receptive to that offer. So, Yasmin, you know what you got to do." Yasmin's like, "What are you talking about?" "Yasmin, you know what you got to do." She's like, "What you talking about?" I said, "Listen, as the head of the comms department, you know what you got to do." And she's like, "I don't get what you're saying." And he's like, "I think you're going to have to, he's going to have to go. You know what I mean? Because if y'all can't work together, he has to go." He's like, "What are you talking about? You don't have the ability to do that." He was like, "Well, listen, if Yasmin takes the deal as the head of comms, she can do it." So then, "Yasmin, do you accept the position?" She's like, "Yeah." He said, "Well, you know what you got to do." And then Yasmin tried to give my man a out. He's like, "Listen, we could work together." He was like, "I don't want to work together with you." She was like, "All right, fine. You're fired." They got fired. It was terrible. He got fired. He had to leave. And then he said this thing, damn, I wish I wrote it down. He was like, you said, "This ain't a startup. You need to Google the Kellen something act." And I immediately Googled that shit. I was like, well, let me Google it. But basically, it's a phenomenon where people that have limited intelligence on some shit think that they know more than they do. He's basically saying, y'all motherfuckers don't even know what the fuck you doing. And I'm somebody that knows my job. And you getting rid of me and you going to hire her. I bet. Go Google that. That's some famous last words. Google that, motherfucker. Or famous first words. Shout out to Tiana Taylor. Google me. So boom. So that happens. Now, Yasmin, savvy as she could be, she's like, because Whitney's like, "Listen, you could take Haley if you want, But you, me, and Henry, we are united front. And she said, all right, bet. She's in the elevator with Haley, just the two of them in the elevator. And she says, Haley, I'm going to make you, you're going to work for me in the communications department. I'm giving you a promotion. And Haley is cool as a fan. She's like, oh, that's what's up. Now, let me ask you a question. Are you giving that to me basically because, you know, basically, I you know what I'm saying? I went down on your husband. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's keep it funky. Is that what you're doing? Because I gave your husband head. You know what I mean? And when I was giving your husband head, it felt like I was giving you head. It's like, hey, yo. She was going crazy. And Yasmin was like, well, no, you know, like, she was spinning Yasmin. Yasmin was like, oh, shit, this woman here, she's a threat. And she said, Haley handled the whole shit. We're in the elevator. She handled the whole shit. She said, listen, don't even worry about it. She says, you know, my old boss used to say, no need to get anxious about any of this because none of us get out of this shit alive. And then she step off the elevator, right? And then she lift her skirt up just to show her ass cheeks. Now, it could be cameras and shit. She lift the whole skirt up. She says, thank you, mommy. Yo, she's diabolical. I was like, oh, shit, this is I fuck with this. This is different. So, boom. So, now, yes, we got somebody to watch. All right. Whitney, he be saying some slick shit. Now, this is a moment, and if y'all watch it, I'm curious, what do you think? Please let me know. Whitney is talking to Henry later on. Oh, that's the other thing. When Henry got off the stage, Yasmin was like, see, I told you, you got to listen to me. As she's about to hug him, yo, Henry go right past Yasmin and go hug Whitney, which was crazy. Hug Whitney, like, you know what I mean? Left his wife off on the side. She peeped that shit like, damn, you know. So later on, there's a moment where it's Henry and Whitney there in the office and they're kicking in, kind of like recapping what had happened. And, you know, Henry humbly says, listen, I appreciate, you know, like speaking life into me. I appreciate your encouragement. I appreciate you believing in me. And Whitney's like, well, listen, can I talk out of school for a second? And Henry's like, yeah, that's no problem. He says, listen, he had a line, but the one line that he said in the whole thing, he said, privileged people who are, he said, there's a, basically there's a threat of, he said, privileged people who are intellectually insecure. Like, that was the line. He said, basically, that you got to be careful with privileged people who are intellectually insecure. That's what Whitney said to Henry. Henry assumes, because he says, listen, if you're going to talk shit about my wife, I'd appreciate you just saying it flat out. And Henry, I mean, Whitney don't really cop to it. He kind of just continues talking or whatever, whatever. But I think he was talking about Henry. Let me know what you think. I think he was talking about Henry. I think he was saying, yo, you are privileged. Because he even said something right after it. But because he even said himself, he said, listen, I think that I'm beyond my station in life. And every day I fight to get past that, to satisfy my destiny. Because of how I was born, I believe that I'm smarter than, you know, my station in life. I think I deserve more than what would be my fate. Every day, that's what I do. I yearn for that shit. Anyway, I thought that was an interesting moment. Like I said, we see Diker on the sad coke usage spectrum. He's in the motherfucking bathroom, sniffing and crying. And then here come Rishi coming in, and you know, they chop it up outside of the bar. And then Diker says, yo, I know who you are. You know what I'm saying? I know who you are. And, you know, Rishi, you know, he's out the game. So he love when people know who he is. He's a fallen star. He's like, yo, word, you know, blah, blah, blah. They wind up. Somebody offers a cigarette. This other dude comes out the woodwork. Get the fuck out of here. He was like, yeah, these guys be preying on people when they drunk. Give him a cigarette. The shit got PCP in it. He take you around the corner, take your wallet, your watch, all of that shit. And then Rishi's like, yo, let me get drinks for everybody. So they go get some beers. Then they go back to Rishi's crib. And then they, you know, it's like a bender. You know, Rishi and Diker, they're in that bitch doing coke crazy. The other dude that broke it up, he's just like a regular, you know, he's he's on the pre-aux. He's on the stereo, the old school tuner, blasting the music. And I'm at first, I'm like, is he blasting the music because they having coke talk. Rishi and Diker having like intense coke talk. Diker's like, yo, what was it like when your wife got killed? You know, asking all types of inappropriate shit. Like just, and they going on in the little soliloquies and shit. You know how that coke talk be intense. So my man like blasting the music, and I'm thinking, is he just trying to drown out the like, so then he don't kill the vibe, or is he just trying to get lit? Who knows? Then later on, he leaves, and then I'm like, and he leaves, and Rishi goes to the bathroom, you know what I'm saying? Use the bathroom, but the end of the bathroom, this is his house, he got some coke like stashed behind the toilet. So he threw a crazy bump of that. He come back out, Diker is looking like he's fucking OD'd. I think he might have fucked with some fentanyl or something like that, but he's like passed out, done. You know what I mean? Looking like he might be dead, looking blue in the face. He trying to wake him up. He's smacking him up. Diker's non-responsive. Then there's a knock at the door. Initially, Rishi's thinking that it might be the dude because he said, yeah, I'm going to go get some beers. So then he goes to the door. It's some cops outside. They're like, hey, we got some noise complaints. So he just closed the door in the cop's face, ba-doom. And then, you know, well, he probably should have said, oh, it's no problem. We'll turn the music down. And it probably could have been cool. He just slams the door because he coked up. He just took a whole bump of coke. So he paranoid. And he got a nigga that might be dead in his crib. So he slams the door in the cop's, ba-doom. Cop's like, open the door, open the door. Rishi scared to death, you know. So this motherfucker, he goes out on this balcony. And earlier, before, he started talking about suicide. And Diker was like, nah, don't be so selfish. You know what I mean? Like, you need to be in this world, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Rishi on the balcony. They high up as a motherfucker. He on the balcony. He looking. I don't know if he's trying to kill himself or he's just trying to get away. He barefoot. He on the balcony, sitting on the edge of the thing. The cops finally break in. They notice Diker, like, you know, passed out or whatever. When the cop says, there's a guy on the balcony. And you can tell he's bracing himself for the jump. You know what I mean? He's taking deep breaths. And this motherfucker jumps. Motherfucker jumps. You just hear him hit the ground. Boom. I'm thinking, is he dead? They pan to him, laid out on the ground. He don't look like his head is cracked open or no shit like that. But his ankles and feet are done for. This motherfucker can't get up and walk nowhere. He's fucked up. And the cops basically cuff him, and that's how they end the episode. And I'm like, damn, Rishi. You know? For a guy so smart, he makes some of the dumbest decisions. You know? But I guess he might even feel like he ain't got nothing to live for. You know what I'm saying? In the midst of that coke talk, he was reminded that, you know, he was the cause of his wife's death. And he's remembering his wife. This kid has been taken away from him, so he can't even be a father. He doesn't have a job, so he can't do what he's great at. You know what I mean? Like, he's just selling coke to survive. And it looked like he's about to lose his freedom. So this motherfucker jumps off the damn balcony and loses his ankles. It's a fucking damn shame. Anyway, man, that was that. Let me know what y'all thought of this episode. Let me know what you're thinking of the season thus far. Let me know if I hit y'all with some more misinformation. You know, blah, blah, blah. Hit me with some predictions and anything else. Listen. Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase, February 26th through the 28th. I think tickets are still available. I'll be out there. Cold ass Ann Arbor. I'm coming out there. I want to see y'all in the building. So please go get your tickets. You can go to DamianLemon.com or, you know, shit. I've been putting it up. I got a link in the bio, all of that shit. Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase. We have some other things coming up soon. But shit, until then, you know, as always, tell a friend to tell a friend, and even an enemy, to get in the conversation. Hello. Conversation.